Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Time for another Monday on the Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network. Good morning to you. Coming up, we'll get things started with last night's clash in Kansas City. The Lions and Chiefs meeting on Sunday Night Football, including a post-game brawl we have to talk about. James Franklin is out of a job at Penn State out of nowhere. Double D called it over the week, and he said, we might lose to Northwestern. He was right. Who is next in line to coach at Penn State? Also, everyone will cast their votes for our Monday MVP, and we have two games on Monday Night Football tonight, Bills and Falcons, and the Bears coming to D.C. I'm Michael Jenkins. She is Chelsea Messenger. It is a Monday. Chelsea, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. So I don't want to come in here like a braggart, but listen, Jenks, I feel like I probably had a better weekend than yours because, listen, last night, for the first time ever, we ordered the Texas Roadhouse Family Feast.
Ooh.
And boy, when I say it was life-changing, it was life-changing. I'm sorry that your weekend didn't include this, but mine did. So by default, my weekend wins.
I don't know. Texas beat Oklahoma, so I could starve all weekend and go on a 72-hour
fast. Texas Roadhouse, baby.
That's what I'm talking about. You celebrate your way, I celebrate mine. Did you at least toast to the horns?
Well, what I'm saying is Texas won, Texas Roadhouse. There's some synergy there.
Yes.
What I'm saying.
Correct.
But, I mean, I didn't need a reason to celebrate because, I mean, NC State got smoked by like 30 points by Notre Dame, which we expected. And also, oh, let's put the brakes on people who are like, Chelsea, the Titans are going to beat the Raiders this week.
Well.
They didn't. Scored a total of 10 points. So, Jenks, we don't need things to celebrate in our house. We just do it anyway, because if we waited on things to celebrate, we'd be waiting a long time.
Well, what was in this Texas Roadhouse family meal pack or whatever it was?
I think I have it memorized. So it's 2 8-ounce sirloins. It's 2 6-ounce sirloins. It is 2 huge portions of mashed potatoes, 2 huge portions of green beans, 12 rolls, and the biggest thing of cinnamon butter you've ever seen. Plus a huge thing of salad. It was a massive feast.
God, that sounds delicious. How many steaks did Jake eat? 3? Gave you 1?
I think we wanted to save room for sides because the sides were amazing and the rolls were amazing. Honestly, I feel like people go to Texas Roadhouse just for the rolls. They're like those yeast rolls, which you've been to a chain restaurant before that has the yeast rolls. So those were amazing. The cinnamon butter was amazing. So I feel like I maybe filled up a little bit too much on the rolls and sides because I only ate like 1 small steak.
Mm-hmm.
But this is going to be our meal for the next like 3 meals. So I am excited for leftovers this morning for breakfast.
That sounds awesome. All right, let's talk bets. And then we got to get into last night's brawl in Kansas City.
All right. So best bet for both of us was a winner. Baseball has been saving our bacon lately. Had the Tigers Mariners first 7 under 4.5. This was back on Friday. I'm not going to go into it too much, but it was a low scoring affair, tied 1-1 after 7 innings. That was a win. But usually my props are pretty right on the nose. This week was not the case. Maybe it was because of game script. Stephon Diggs did not have a big game. He went back to back over the century mark in the games prior to this. But here's the problem about having a good quarterback. I had him over 16.5 receiving yards. Sometimes when you have a great quarterbacks are good at spreading the ball around. And that's exactly what Drake May did in a win over the Saints. Diggs only finished with 28 yards. Also had J.K. Dobbins over 64.5 rush yards. That game was terrible. The Broncos and the Jets, what was the final score? 13-10, something crazy like that. So neither team really got going, and that included J.K. Dobbins. Needed him over 64.5, so a couple L's on my props was not a great weekend in that regard.
That happens. No biggie. I was also on Tigers Mariners, first five under three and hook, like you talked about. Air Force UNLV, I had the Rebels minus 6.5. That was a loss, as UNLV wins only by 3, 51-48. 1-1 weekend for this guy. Donkster had the Mariners on the money line against the Tigers on Friday. Mariners win in 15. What a great baseball game that was. As for Double D's degenerate parlay, he goes 4-3-1, and our squad parlay goes 3-2. It is the Daily Tip here on a BetMGM Network. Great to have you with us on another week on this Monday. We begin Sunday Night Football. The Chiefs down the Lions 30-17. The Chiefs laying 2.5. The Chiefs minus 135 on the money line. And the underhits total set at 47. Lions come in with a 4-game winning streak, and the Chiefs put that to an end.
Hollywood Brown in motion. He's got on the pop pass. Hollywood Brown to the end zone. Touchdown, KC.
It's Mike Tirico on NBC. Brown with 2 touchdowns in the night to go along with 1 for Xavier Worthy. But then after the game, after a dominant performance by the Chiefs, a fight breaks out.
Well, altercation going on. I don't know what started it.
Well, Brian Branch was involved in something, and there was a little exchange, and then people came running. I think that was Juju Smith-Schuster who came running into that.
I just glanced up and saw 2 Chiefs, 1 Lion, and then, of course, everybody coming on the field at the end of the game. And look, and there is a pretty significant brawl going on here, the back end of that over to the right.
So here's what led up to this fight. Apparently, Branch ignored a high five from Patrick Mahomes at the end of the game. Juju Smith-Schuster confronted Branch about it. That led to the fight. And then Branch also said after the game, he got a block in the back from Smith-Schuster right in front of a referee that was not called. He was upset about that. He did eventually apologize, and so did Lions head coach Dan Campbell.
Start with this. I love Brian Branch, but what he did is inexcusable. And it's not going to be accepted here. It's not what we do. It's not what we're about. I apologize to Coach Reed and the Chiefs and, you know, and Schuster. That's not okay. That's not what we do here. And it's not going to be okay. He knows it. Our team knows it. And so that's not what we do.
Well, good on Dan Campbell for owning that. Ultimately, this will take away from what was a very impressive Kansas City victory from the outset. Once they got on the field, they just executed flawlessly.
Oh, absolutely. This was a big get-right win for Kansas City and their offense. But I feel like the fight was more of a Brian Branch thing as opposed to like a Lions thing. Even I feel like Patrick Mahomes wasn't really involved in that. Like if you look at like the aerial view, it felt to me like Brian Branch was trying to seek out Juju Smith-Schuster. So I feel like it was more of like a Juju and a Brian Branch thing, especially when you have like the pattern of history with Brian Branch, where he was already fined $23,000 for unsportsmanlike penalties and face mask calls back in the game against the Packers. So it's not something I'm going to take away as saying, oh, the Lions are losing the locker room. It didn't feel like that to me. It just felt like, you know, the Chiefs were the better team last night, and especially their defense. And again, I feel like this has been the one consistent thing for Kansas City, with the exception against Jacksonville, where Jacksonville actually was pretty effective in the red zone, with the exception of that Trevor Lawrence fumble. But the Lions were only in the red zone a couple times, you know, last night. And when they were, the Chiefs put the clamps down. But I will say this, that first touchdown that they called back after not even throwing flags, that did feel very suspicious, and it is not helping the people who are, you know, conspiracy theorists saying every penalty goes against the other team that is playing the Chiefs, and coincidentally, the Chiefs did not have a single penalty last night.
They did not. I think this was a very impressive win for Kansas City, flags or no. I mean, they were really, really good, and the Lions tried to come out and tried to establish the run and did so for a while, just keeping Patrick Mahomes on the sideline. But once Kansas City came in, they scored on the first drive of the game where they had the football. They scored on their first drive of the second half. Mahomes was exceptional in this game, 302 yards, 3 touchdown passes, does it in 198 games, 8 faster than Aaron Rodgers, so the fastest to 300 touchdowns in NFL history. But this was sort of classic Chiefs, and you knew they were going to come out. They could not afford to fall to 2-4. They had to have this win.
Oh, absolutely. And so they're showing up at the right moment. Now they get Rashee Rice back next week. So let me ask, are the Chiefs now in the top five for you? Are they a contender in the postseason?
I am not going to overreact here. I think they're right there on the edge. I'm not going to go one dominant performance from the Chiefs in a game at home, in a game at night, especially the Lions, who, look, the Lions have been very good, and this was the highest scoring team in the NFL coming into this game, but also they hadn't really played anyone on the Chiefs level, so I kind of felt like this was a perfect spot for Kansas City to get right. I think they're right there, but I think we tend to, and I understand, you give Kansas City the benefit of the doubt because of what they've done. I think they're there. They're right on the cusp, but I'm not throwing them into the top five. Are you?
I don't think so, but I still think it's one of those teams that nobody's going to want to play in the postseason. Because, like, look at them. Like, they always raise their level of competition when they're playing the best teams in the league. Like, I understand some of those games have gone to the other team, and some of those games have been losses this year, but still, they're in these games. And it feels like when it comes to the postseason, you're not going to question them. You know, when the light is the brightest, obviously this team has been there and done that, which is not the same as some of these other teams in the AFC. So now that you have like the Ravens who feel very down and out, obviously the Bengals ain't doing anything. Maybe it's just like a process of elimination. Although Josh Allen still stands and he is still very good.
I will say for the Lions, you have to feel good about the fact that you're going to get healthier on defense. DJ Reed was out. Terrion Arnold was out. Avante Maddox was out. So all these guys are corners, which certainly would have helped against a Patrick Mahomes-led offense. Regardless, we move on. The Lions hosting the Bucs next Monday night, and the Chiefs welcome the Raiders on Sunday afternoon. Also last night in the majors, the ALCS, Game 1. The Mariners lead the series 1-0 after topping the Blue Jays 3-1. The Mariners plus 135 on the money line. Total set at 8, the under hits. Blue Jays get a leadoff home run from George Springer on the very first pitch of the game. Then the Mariners tie things up in the 6th on Cal Raleigh's second home run of the postseason, and that brings Jorge Polanco to the plate.
It's the 3-2. Polanco rips one to left field, base hit. Rodriguez heads home, and the Mariners have taken the lead.
Call courtesy of Fox. Polanco also adds a run-scoring single in the 8th inning as part of a 2-for-4 night. And Bryce Miller, brilliant on the mound, allows just one earned over 6 innings. And the Mariners, who have never played a World Series game, move a mini step closer. They get the win in Game 1. So, nice start for Seattle and really cooled down those Blue Jays bats, which had been red hot.
Right, and especially to do it on the road, where the atmosphere was absolutely wild. In Toronto, you can tell their entire country is behind this team. So you see George Springer come out with, you know, the leadoff home run. But then the Mariners settle down, and they settle down the crowd as well, because that is the best recipe for settling down a crowd, is not allowing them to score any more runs. So this was really impressive on Miller's part, you know, going 6 strong for the Mariners here. And Jorge Polanco, 2 of the 3 RBIs of the game. And of course, Big Dumper. It is so funny to me, the shirts that we're seeing in the stands now. Have you seen the ones that say Big Dump Energy? I've got to get me one of those.
Yeah, Big Dump Energy. And he's continued his run in the postseason. Like, he's continued to look good. You never know, right? Especially after a regular season that kind of comes out of nowhere and you have a team that makes the playoffs. Sometimes these guys cool off, or it's a different season and they're pitched too different. But he's looked like the Big Dumper that we've seen all year. He's been such a great story.
Oh, absolutely. Like, not just the home runs, but he's hitting 400 for the postseason.
Yeah.
Because I think that was one of the knocks on him. If you're looking at the MVP discussion, is that Aaron Judge was the better overall hitter. Because Aaron Judge had like 330 for the regular season, which is crazy. So, like, not only are the home runs coming for Cal Raleigh, he is a very, very good hitter come this postseason. And, of course, the Mariners need it. When you're playing these low-scoring games, you need every ounce of offense. So that home run, obviously, you know, was huge in this game as well.
And you can't say enough about Bryce Miller. This is a guy who, during the regular season, had gone 6 innings only once. That's it. That's the number one. Did it for the second time all season last night. Retires 17 of the last 19 batters he faces. This is a guy who had an ERA over 5 during the regular season. He was essentially the number 5 guy in the rotation. He pitches on short days rest. So when you get a guy who is not necessarily the ideal starter that you want to have in a game one, and yet he still goes out there and performs. I mean, this was huge for Seattle in that respect because it didn't necessarily set up the way they would set it up, and they still get the dub.
Right. It feels like they're playing with house money now.
Yeah.
Because they have a guy that's deeper in the rotation that got the win in the first game, and it's on the road. So, like, this is a huge way to start the series for the Mariners because they still have some games where they're going to be playing at home, and one would think they'd have a better chance at home, even though I'll say this. Cal Raleigh has been absolutely incredible when playing in Toronto. Like, some of his best numbers come against Kevin Gausman, who started last night. I think he has 4 career home runs off of him, and he loves playing in Toronto for some reason.
Yeah, he gets it going up there. Also, Vladdy Jr. went 9 of 17, 3 home runs, 9 RBI against the Yankees last night, 0 for 4 in Game 1. Game 2 tonight in Toronto, Blue Jays, a minus 130 favorite. Coming up, Penn State goes from national title contender to looking for a new head coach midseason. What is next after the firing of James Franklin? That is next on the Daily Tip here on the BetMGM Network.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back on a Monday. Appreciate you waking up with us. Jealous Messenger, I'm Michael Jenkins, coming up on the show. The Nittany Lions watch their season go from bad to worse, and James Franklin pays the price for it. Almost wrote the ultimate price. I was like, well, he didn't die, so we'll put that in. The ultimate price. They killed him.
He paid the ultimate price.
Man, I almost paid the ultimate price on Saturday. I told you I had a big college football weekend coming up. 8 hours at the sports bar. Whew, made it. It was a little dicey there at the end. I got there when it opened. So I walked in, sat down, got the seat we always like to get, had some friends coming. By the end, we had a group of like 8 or 9 people. It's a nice cross-section of fans, mostly Texas fans, some Ohio State fans as well. But got there at 11:30 and then got settled in, had a Bloody Mary, got to watch Illinois, Ohio State, Missouri, Alabama. Who else did I watch? It was a pretty good game. I forget. I was just all leading up to Texas, taking on Oklahoma, got the dub there. That last hour was a little dicey, but I actually did something I don't normally do, which is make myself eat. I'm not good at eating while I'm having drinks. I'm like, I'll just eat late, which is a really dumb thing to do. This time, I actually had some sustenance. So all in all, a very good day, especially when you close it out with a dub.
Wow, that discipline. You know, what they always say about the people who are the first ones there and the last ones to leave. Those are the guys that show the true leadership at the bar.
I was good. Yes, I was good. Well, my friend Chad works upstairs. I've known Chad for a long time. And every time I'm there, I mean, you got to take a shot if they offer one, you know? So I was getting ready to leave. I'm walking out and Chad looks at me, walks into the bar and slides a shot my way. I'm like, okay. Going to finish strong here. But you know what? All in all, good day. Our Ohio State friends, they got a win over Illinois. They also covered the number, so that was good. Texas covered. Texas won. So I love doing that, but I already decided like it's going to be a few weeks before I do that again. Like, good time, but also I can't do that every weekend.
Serious question. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been offered a shot and said no? I feel like I know the answer to this.
No, yeah, there have been a few times. Like, every now and then, like, it'll be to the point where I'm like, okay, like, we just did one. You guys want to do another? I'm like, okay. Like, I got to draw the line here. I'm trying to be able to walk out of here. I'm not going to do that. So, I do actually, it was the only one I had all day. So, it was like, it's not like I'd been pounding shots all day or something like that. But I was like, all right, I know, Chad. It's kind of like our bonding thing. Like, last week, I was like, we got to do a shot before you leave. I was like, okay, sure. But I'll, from time to time, I'll be like, I can't do this. But I was in good enough shape where I was like, I can do this and get out of here because I'm leaving. That kind of thing.
Yeah. I guess it's a small sample size because I had never seen it with my eyes. The times that I've been out with you,
those are special occasions.
There's never been a no in the picture.
Well, that's true. Also, if I get around people like Double D, I'm going to blame Double D. Anyone I get around
or
who
Sammy
is...
Sammy P.
Or Sam, oh God, Sammy P too. You've seen it. I mean, I can't say anything to you. But also, those are special occasions because everyone's so excited to get together. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough because we never get to see each other. So when Sammy P comes over with literally an entire tray of shots, you're like, all right. Well, if our boss is doing them, because like Andrew's doing shots, you don't want to be the loser that's like, well, I'm kind of watching what I drink. Until you fall down the stairs and break your collarbone. Maybe don't do that.
As always, we blame Ryan Horvath on this show. In the end, we just say, I think it was Horvath at the end. Well, the coaching equivalent of falling down the stairs and breaking your collarbone is James Franklin. What happened at Penn State this season? They lost to Northwestern over the weekend, 22-21, as a 20.5-point favorite. So this is a what a wild ride for Penn State. 17 days ago, this team was ranked in the top five. Think about that. Less than 3 weeks ago, you're in the top five. You've got Oregon coming in, game of the year, a game you've been preparing for. You've been preparing for this moment. You barely lose the game. All right, it's all right. You still have a chance later on the season. Then you go and you lose to UCLA and Northwestern in Happy Valley. So James Franklin is gone. Went 104-45 across 12 seasons. This is really what did him in. Against AP top 10 teams, 4-21. He went 1-18 against AP top 10 teams in the Big Ten. I'll tell you what, James Franklin losing his job midseason was not something I would have ever predicted. What I thought, okay, maybe they don't win those big games because he doesn't win big games. But this just, I mean, once they lost to Oregon, it feels like he just lost the locker room.
Yeah, absolutely. Even though it did feel like you could lose that type of game and still come back from it, right? Like, that is your job as a head coach, is to right the ship when things go wrong, especially when you only lose in overtime. So this was one of those things where my first thought was, where's the New York Times article on James Franklin and calling him the biggest, you know, failure in college football? Because they did this to Arch Manning, but yet this was the team that was supposed to have the most talent of any team in the country. Jenks, the preseason rankings, it was all Penn State. They were saying, oh, all these guys came back and declined the NFL draft because they knew they were going to be playing for a championship. And now Drew Aller's out for the season as well. It just feels like the worst possible scenario. Like, how could this have gone worse? Like, maybe losing some of their first games of the season? I feel like this is the worst possible ending to what started as a great story for Penn State. It was supposed to be their year.
I'm just speechless. To go from this is the best team in James Franklin's tenure, this is the year when he possibly wins a national title, to James Franklin is out of a job, is remarkable. It just goes to show that Penn State was sort of on the edge of, hey, fine, you've been great for us to a point, but you better get it done this year. And the one thing you cannot do, you cannot drop a game to UCLA and come home and lose to Northwestern. Like, I get it. And I feel like, you know, a change had to be made here. I'm not someone who generally gets on board with firing a coach midseason, but it just feels like James Franklin took them as far as he could take them. Didn't put this in the chat, which is Kurt Cignetti has more top 10 wins in a month than James Franklin has had in 11.5 years at Penn State. I mean, I'm kind of speechless. And this is a lost season now. So you've got an interim head coach in Terry Smith. Drew Aller is out for the year. And, oh, by the way, the buyout for James Franklin is a little more than $48 million. So Penn State is moving in a new direction where they're going to pay for it.
Oh, absolutely. And also, it's the trickle-down effect, because I will say this. Like, James Franklin is at least a good recruiter, mm-hmm. but all those recruits that were committed to Penn State, it feels like they are leaving in a mass exodus. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's what happens when coaches are fired, because usually the commits are based on the head coach. So not only is Penn State losing this year, it feels like it's going to hurt them for the next few years as well.
The one thing they could do is, you know, they will be able to re-recruit some of these guys once they bring in a new head coach. At least they'll try. They certainly will. Yeah. And mm-hmm. so you'll have Matt Rhule or Kurt Cignetti or someone go back out and reach back out and say, hey, I'd like to meet you. Because a lot of these guys, of course, they form relationships, right? And that relationship is with the head coach. And you think, I want to play for you. Like, I want you to be the guy who brings me along. And once that guy leaves or is fired, then, well, then it's on to someone new. And a lot of these guys certainly don't want to hang on to a program where they don't know what the future is, which begs the question, what is the future for Penn State? Who are they going to go after? Matt Rhule seems to be the guy that gets tossed around a lot. And for a couple reasons. Number one, he's a Penn State alum. Number two, he has a history of taking programs who have... I mean, Penn State's a different animal, but, you know, went to Temple, went to Baylor, went to Nebraska, and has taken these programs and elevated those programs. And the thought here is that Penn State, okay, we need you to elevate us to that next level, which is winning against top 10 teams and bringing us a national title. I feel like he's going to be the favorite. I would also say that I would back up the Brinks truck and try to hire Cignetti, because what he's doing in Indiana is remarkable.
Right. Like, I feel like that's definitely the home run hire. Like, mm-hmm. if you had your pick of just about anybody who is in the college ranks, you can't ignore what Kurt Cignetti is doing with much fewer resources. Because that's the thing. What was Indiana before he got there? An absolute nothing burger. Like, people didn't even realize they had a football team. They're like, oh, this is a basketball school. And then he took them to a premier powerhouse program in the Big Ten, capping it off by the timing feels extremely, you know, fortuitous in this one. The fact that they just went on the road and beat Oregon. So mm-hmm. it's one of those things where he has built his own culture at Indiana. So you think to yourself, okay, if he can do this at Indiana, what can he do at Penn State with all these recruits and all of this pedigree?
Yeah, I think that Indiana win was, I mean, the final straw was losing to Northwestern. There's no question about that. But then when you look up and you're like, wait a second, Indiana went on the road and beat Oregon? Are you kidding? Right. Indiana beat Oregon? Mm-hmm. We couldn't beat them at home. I know it's one game, but when you're talking about sort of a volatile situation anyway where people are on edge and then you lose that game and you look up and you're like, you've got to be kidding me. The Hoosiers? The Hoosiers are beating Oregon? That's it. Like, we're done here. We are done here. I mean, this is such a massive piece of news, and you sort of felt like it might be coming. After UCLA, there was sort of some scuttlebutt that, you know what, Franklin now, you better pull it together quick. And so this was just the worst possible scenario for him. And I think the book is written on James Franklin, which is this is a great program builder, great recruiter. But throughout his career, I mean, we have a massive sample size. We always talk about sample sizes, right? Like, and if they matter. You have a massive sample size where over the years, again and again and again and again, he has not been able to get it done. This is kind of who he is.
Well, and especially if you're coaching for one of those teams that believes it is a blue chip program. Because, like, this is fine if you coach for, like, I don't know, like Mississippi State or Vanderbilt, you know, for James Franklin back in the past. But it's not going to cut it if you're at one of the top programs, or at least they believe themselves to be, in college football. Because he did win a lot of games. Like, I saw some people going back and forth saying, like, he actually has some of the most wins of any, like, active college head coaches. But the thing is, it's like Penn State's not trying to, like, just be a decent team. They want to be one of the best, and to be the best, you have to beat the best, and James Franklin couldn't do that. But Jinx, I was thinking to myself, how much do you think college football has changed in the fact that I feel like these guys who used to be labeled as really good recruiters but maybe not the mm-hmm. best head coaches, it feels like they could go pretty far before the days of NIL, because, you know, college football a lot is about talent. But now that it's still about talent, but it's about the money that you can pay the talent, mm-hmm. do you think it negates that skill for head coaches?
To a point, recruiting is still recruiting. You still have to bring a guy in on a visit. You have to show him a good time. You have to make sure that you say the right things, right? This is how we're going to deploy you in our scheme. You know, this is where we see you fitting in at our program. And a recruit has to like you. All of those things still matter. But let's not kid ourselves. At the end of the day, this is about money. But also it goes into, okay, how, as a coach, you can recruit well, but can you manage the portal? Can you manage the roster? Which means, okay, we have a finite amount of dollars here. There's this idea there's just infinite amounts of money. There is a lot of money, but certainly how are we going to allocate it? How are we going to allocate it this year versus next year? What about the guys on the roster that we need to keep versus guys maybe we're willing to let go? So recruiting still matters, but there's a whole subsection of recruiting that has opened up, which is portal management and money management, which is something that was not a thing, you know, 10 short years ago.
Right, and then my next question would be, what type of job do you think Penn State is to, you know, potential candidates? Do you think it is a top-tier job?
Yes. Yes, it's a top-tier job. I mean, you can argue the particulars about, all right, top five. I mean, that argument really goes nowhere, but this is a top-ten job. They have the money, according to... I was worried about NIL money, but Denton made a good point, which is we're talking about an era now where private equity comes into play, and that's a ton of money. So when you think about atmosphere, when you think about tradition, there's no reason why, and this goes for a handful of programs across the country, there's no reason why you shouldn't be winning at a high level, winning titles. If you're talking about Penn State, they haven't won a national title since 1986. That's... I mean, my Longhorns, they haven't won a title since 2005. That's forever ago. And yet, you know, they have all the facilities available to him, all the faculties available, everything you need to win it all, and they haven't done it at the rate that you would expect. So I don't blame Penn State for sort of losing their minds here. It is time, long past time, the Nittany Lions won something of significance.
Right. If you're Kurt Cignetti, do you want to leave Indiana, though?
I don't think I would.
He's just crazy enough to think that he can legitimately turn Indiana into a powerhouse. To be like this generation's Bobby Bowden, taking little old Florida State and making them this massive thing. He's just crazy enough to think he can do the same thing with Indiana.
I think that's the right call. But I will say, if Penn State comes in and gives you a hard sell and says, here's the money. Yes, Indiana's great, but it's Happy Valley. It's the tradition of Penn State. It's a platform that you're going to get at very few schools in the country. Cignetti might stay at Indiana. I mean, what a story that would be if somehow he turned the Hoosiers, who have in my entire lifetime been one of the worst teams in college football. Like, you don't pay attention to Indiana, and now everyone's paying attention to Indiana. Like, that's... He might... D-Day might be right here.
Yeah, I think so, too. Like, that is a tough program to turn into, like, this powerhouse and just up and leave. I don't know. It's going to be tough.
It is. I still feel like Rule's the guy, right? Because he's the Penn State alum, and that carries so much weight at particular programs. That'll be fascinating to watch. Coming up next year on the show, we're just getting warmed up, and just in time to pick the most outstanding performance of the weekend, our Monday MVP is coming up next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is a Monday here on the Daily Tip. Hope you have a great morning. Get another week started off for you. I'm Jinx, she's Chelsea. Whole crew back and ready to go. Coming up here in a couple minutes, everyone gets a chance to speak up and make their case for the winner of the weekend. It is our Monday MVP. Here's who will not win MVP. Justin Fields. Whew, this poor guy. Did you wake up early to watch Jets Broncos in London town?
I listened to it on the radio on our way to church.
Ah.
It was not entertaining.
It was not. You missed nothing. I did not watch this game. I slept in, and I made the right call. So Justin Fields had the worst passing performance in Jets history. Negative 10 net passing yards. He went 9 of 17 for 45 yards, but lost 55 yards on 9 sacks. So Aaron Glenn was frustrated after the game. Someone asked him, will you make a change at quarterback? Will you think about it? And he was like, what kind of question is that? Guys have bad games. That doesn't mean you bench them. But the crazy thing to watch was, and then Garrett Wilson lost his mind. Just before halftime, the Jets had the football. And you talk about having no confidence in your team. They were going down the field, and they were trailing the Broncos 10-6. And they just took their time going down the field. No inclination at all to try and score, to try and get on the board. They were letting the clock run down, taking their time. And Garrett Wilson was like, what the hell are we doing? And so Aaron Glenn explained after the game, yeah, I didn't want the Broncos to get the ball back, and I knew we were getting the football at the start of the second half. Which is all well and fine, but they didn't even try to score just before halftime. And so as they're going to the locker room, you saw Garrett Wilson like getting Aaron Glenn's face a little bit and say, what are we doing here? Like, why aren't we going? Show a sense of urgency. Didn't do it. Jets are now 0-6 for the third time in franchise history. Their longest play, Chelsea, was 11 yards. 11 yards. God. I'm rooting for Aaron Glenn. This was a bad look, and man, I am so glad I didn't watch this game. I was reading about it. I watched some highlights, and I was like, oh, whatever this was, no thanks. Watching this film this week, going back and saying, here's what we can improve upon. A lot of teachable moments.
Like, I'm wondering what the highlights were. Like, I was listening to this game, and it was terrible. Because as bad as the Jets were, like, this was very much a ball game. Like, the final score was 13-11. Justin Fields got sacked 9 times. That's enough for like 5 games for some quarterbacks.
Yeah.
9 times. And I understand he is a scrambling quarterback, but that's a lot. But like, listen, like the defensive matchup was really tough. We knew that this was going to be tough for the Jets to get things going against this Broncos defense. But I did expect more from the Broncos offense. Like, what a slog. Like, this was not a game worth waking up for. I'm sorry that I listened to even some of it on the radio. It was terrible.
So bad. Man, are the Jets going to go winless this season? They got to pick up a dog. They were still close. Here's the thing, is that it's one thing when you're losing games. It's just another when you start to see dysfunction take hold. Last week, I was talking about how rot can take hold, and then you start to learn how to lose. You forget how to win. You get in these bad habits, and those bad habits take hold. And now when you see your star receiver, and it was, I don't want to dramatize it too much, but certainly you could tell that Garrett Wilson was like, what are we doing here? And there's nothing worse than playing not to win. If you're a competitor in the National Football League, you might not be good, but you want to play to win the game. And when you see a coach sort of scared to try and win the game because he knows we're not any good, like that's an insult to a competitor who's like, let's go. Let's win this game. And that makes me worry even more about the Jets because now you're starting to see guys really unhappy with what's going on. I mean, Garrett Wilson said after the game, he's like, once I figured out why we didn't have a sense of urgency, I was disappointed. I'll just say that. So things are, I mean, they were already turning in the wrong direction. They're really headed that way now.
Well, I'll say this. At least there's another team in their division that looks like a dumpster fire as well. Because I don't know if you saw the comments coming out of the Dolphins, you know, their game,
yeah.
Where Tua was like, yeah, nobody even shows up to the players-only meetings.
What?
Even though some people are like, hey, Tua, you're on the team. If you want better leadership, maybe you start things. But I don't know. That is a whole other conversation entirely, but like the bottom of the AFC East, boy, is there some drama.
There's some bottoms and there's some real bottoms, and that's like right there. My God, AFC East. Whoa, okay. Those are the low lights. Now we focus on the highlights of the weekend.
Here are your nominees for Monday MVP.
MVP! MVP!
Unbelievable what he's doing. Kurt Cignetti, the head coach in Indiana.
For Mendoza. Here comes the pressure. Throws to the corner. Touchdown, Surratt.
I cannot tell you how incredible it is to watch Indiana win like this. Like, one season of winning for Indiana is one thing. Consecutive seasons where you see someone building a program at Indiana. Like, my entire, most everyone's life has grown up with Indiana being terrible. And so here they are. They beat Oregon 30-20. Indiana gets a win over a top five team for the first time since 1967. They snap Oregon's 18-game winning streak. The Hoosiers now rank number three in both polls for the first time ever. Highest ranking ever. What Kurt Cignetti has done in Bloomington with this football program just boggles the mind. And now we're talking about a legitimate college football championship contender with what they've done. When you can go into Oregon and play like that and out-physical Oregon on both sides of the football, which is what they did, you are legitimate. So Kurt Cignetti continues, Google him, continues to get it done in Bloomington. He's my Monday MVP.
Ooh, that's a good one. That was absolutely a massive win for the program and for Kurt Cignetti and for Indiana. So I see where you're going with that one. But for me, I'm going to the NFL, and I'm going with Baker Mayfield.
Going for a big ball. Down the field. Got an open target. Oh, what a catch. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Tez Johnson has his first NFL touchdown and a magnificent flip to go with it.
MVP, MVP, break out the MVP chance, because it feels like Baker Mayfield now has a legitimate chance to be in the MVP discussion, especially now over at BetMGM. The odds makers giving him some credit. He's only plus 425 behind Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes to win the MVP. And here's the thing, the way that he's doing it in Tampa Bay, in this game, he was down Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Jalen McMillan, and Emeka Egbuka left this game in the second half. He was down his top four receivers. So what does he do? He uses Tez Johnson for a 45-yard massive play in a very close game against a very physical Niners team. And here's the cherry on top of the cake or the icing or whatever. When you saw this play of him scramble on 3rd and 14, where it looks like everything you'd expect from Baker Mayfield, do yourself a favor and watch this play. Like, my goodness, he scrambles past, it feels like, at least four Niners players. Every time you thought this play was dead, it wasn't. And somehow Baker feels like Houdini in this play and somehow manages to get a first down. It felt like his MVP moment. If it was later in the season, it probably would be. But my MVP of the weekend is Baker Mayfield and what he's done with Tampa Bay this season.
All right.
All right. I'm giving it to Cameron Dickey. Running back, Texas Tech.
When the music starts, you got to hold your ground. They got to protect the quarterback. And that's the thing. The music starts fast. Cameron Dickey right down the zipper of the defense to strike up the band 71 yards.
Cameron Dickey runs for a career-high 263 yards on 21 carries, two touchdown runs of 71 yards and 55 yards as Texas Tech dominates Kansas 42-17.
All right, Double D. D-Day.
I'm going back to the well for the second week in a row. I'm giving it to Rico Dowdle, running back for the Carolina Panthers.
Fake it to Dowdle. Young's got a shuffle. Steps up, throws. Wide open man is Dowdle. And he's going to take it to the end zone against his former team. Touchdown, Carolina. And the Panthers lead.
I need to check the logs, but I believe Rico Dowdle became the first athlete in the Daily Tip history since Scotty Scheffler to be Monday MVP in back-to-back weeks. So he joins a very elite class. He had another 200 yards from scrimmage. this week, and he did it against his former team. So there's two things that I like. It's the Dallas Cowboys losing, and it's revenge game. So he combined both of those two to lead the Carolina Panthers over the Dallas Cowboys 27-24. He had 183 yards rushing, despite his longest run being only 15 yards. So it's not like that was heavily swayed by one monster run. It was just constant play after play after play, running it down the throat of the Cowboys. He added another 56 yards and a touchdown in the receiving game. So Rico Dowdle's my nominee for Monday MVP.
That's a good one. Jerry Jones has taken so many L's this season.
Oh, it's so great.
That was another big one. Rico was talking smack after the game, saying they weren't strapped in, they weren't buckled up, ready for this one. He was ready for this one. And you know, when he broke Christian McCaffrey's team record for all-purpose yards over two games, and then if you look at his overall performance relative to NFL history, he's in the same, at least over these past two games, he's in the same breath as like Jim Brown, Ricky Williams, guys who just went nuts over a couple game span. He's been
nice
awesome.
Graphic to be a part of.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Okay. Sorry to be the Debbie Downer, but can we remember this was against the Cowboys? Like, for narration standpoint, you know, for storytelling purposes, it was a great game for Rico Dowdle to do it against, but remember that game when Russell Wilson threw for like 500 yards against the Cowboys and everyone's like, oh, Russell Wilson's back. No, it just feels like the Cowboys defense is a get right spot for a lot of people. Just
it's true, but also this is over a two game span too, right? I mean, that Dolphins Cowboys isn't the greatest thing, but when you do this in the National Football League, I mean, it's one thing to go off. It's quite another to go off like this. He has looked all world. Man, I might give it to Rico. That's a good call. Four good candidates this weekend, and now we'll continue talking about it in the next segment because we've got more NFL and more Monday Night Football to get to with two games on the schedule tonight. Falcons, Bills, and Commanders, Bears here in D.C. Hour 2 headed your way on the Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.